Hello, ladies and germs. This is Tim Ferriss, and welcome to the brand new Tribe of Mentors podcast. For those who have no background on me, I'm an author, early stage investor in 50 plus companies like Facebook, Twitter, Uber, Alibaba, and many others, and the host of The Tim Ferriss Show, which is a long form podcast with more than 200 million downloads. Tribe of Mentors, this new gig, is an experimental podcast similar in flavor to The Tim Ferriss Show, but much shorter. Much more distilled. This is season one, planned for 10 to 15 episodes. And instead of my usual 2 to 4 hour interviews, Tribe of Mentors packs a punch, or so it's intended, in, say, 10 to 30 minutes on average, and delivers tools, habits, and lessons learned from world-class performers in every field you can imagine. So you can think of this as a caffeine jolt of not just inspiration, but also tactical advice that you can use. The Tribe of Mentors podcast is largely adapted from my new book of the same name, Tribe of Mentors, subtitled Short Life Advice from the Best in the World, which details the routines, habits, tools of more than 130 people who are the best at what they do, including elite athletes like Kelly Slater and Dara Torres, legendary coaches like Dan Gable, at least a dozen billionaires and iconic investors, co-founders of companies like Facebook, Twitter, Dropbox, Craigslist, and others, poker and cryptocurrency, phenoms, and many geniuses you've never, ever heard of. In some cases, those are my favorites. And you can learn all about Tribe of Mentors at tribeofmentors.com. That's the book, or find it wherever books are sold. But let's get into the audio interview. Today's guest is Scott Belsky. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Scott Belsky, B-E-L-S-K-Y, and at scottbelsky.com. Scott is an entrepreneur, author, and investor. He is a venture partner at Benchmark, a very, very, very highly regarded venture capital firm based in San Francisco. Scott co-founded Behance in 2006 and served as CEO until Adobe acquired Behance in 2012. Millions of people use Behance to display their portfolios as well as track and find top talent across the creative industries. He is an early investor and advisor in Pinterest, Uber, and Periscope, among many other fast-growing startups. He is a friend and one of the people I call most often for startup and life advice. He's crafted a very, very, very unique career and life for himself. So without further ado, please enjoy a few questions with the ever so interesting and insightful Scott Belsky. If you could have a giant billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
So I thought about this for a while and felt that the billboard would say, great opportunities never have great opportunity in the subject line. And the reason is because I think we are always looking for that. And I have never found anyone who's had an incredible, extraordinary career based on an opportunity that was so obviously a great opportunity. Everyone that I know that has been super successful started from a deep passion, oftentimes a deep sense of empathy with people suffering a particular problem that they were fascinated by, and then went for it. So whether you're looking for the best new job, client, partner, or new business opportunity, it's just unlikely to lure you when you first see it. In fact, the best opportunities may not even catch your attention at first. And more often than not, great opportunities look unattractive at the surface. And what makes a opportunity great, of course, is upside. And if the potential upside were explicitly clear, the opportunity would have certainly already been taken. So what I always say is, don't call yourself a visionary or aspire to make a disproportionate impact if you anchor all of your decisions with what you see and know now. I'm always surprised by how lazy people are when they're making serious decisions about their careers. They should join a team not for what it is, but for what they think they can help it become. Be a founder in the sense that you're willing to make something rather than just join something. I think we see this all too often in Silicon Valley, where people always look to join something that's hot and then wonder, why they don't become known for doing so. It's because you got to make something hot in order to really be known for something. So seize opportunities when they present themselves, not just when they're convenient or obvious. And the only way to cultivate your own luck is to be more flexible. You've got to give up something for the right opportunity. You have to be humble, knowing that timing is completely out of your control, and gracious, because when you see something, you've got to seize it. Life's greatest opportunities, they run on their own schedule, not yours. And I think that's one of those things you have to realize at the start.
What is an unusual habit or an absurd thing that you love?
As I thought about this one, I thought about this certain list of songs and certain snacks that I love and preserve for only when I'm doing certain kinds of work. For example, there's this writing playlist of music on my computer that I only allow myself to listen to while writing, because time for writing can be particularly painful for me to plan and adhere to. In some ways, I have otherwise cut out things that I like and take for granted and turn them into highly coveted rewards. My playlist reserved for a writing or deep work periods includes, as a few examples, I'll even play them for, play a little snapshot if this little attempt of mine works. There's a song called Every Day that was featured in this this art piece that Noah Kalina, a Brooklyn-based photographer, did, where he took every photograph of rapid succession, and his girlfriend at the time, this woman named Carly Commando, composed this piece, and I just loved it. And, and I realized if I listened to it too much, I would get tired of it. And so I only listened to it when I was doing my first book many years ago. And then, was allowing myself to listen to it again when I was most recently writing a new book, only during periods of deep work. Another one is this song called The Aviators by Helen Jane Lung. And again, it's just like this sort of, contemplative, thoughtful piece that, that I only listen to during these deep work periods. My goodness, what else? I don't know. There's some Sugar Ross. There's this song Mad World by Michael Andrews and Gary Jules. Another one by, I believe his pronunciation is Ludovico Einaudi. This is Devonire. And again, like a nice, cool tempo build up over the course of the song. And this is my sacred list, and I do not listen to it unless I'm doing work. There are also some snacks that I keep for extended writing and work periods, whether they're these Parmesan crisps that I love at Eli's A Bar or these white chocolate covered pretzels that are pretty awesome. Try to preserve those. Deep work for me means no interruptions or jumping around casually between tasks. Deep work is that, those 3+ hour focus on one problem sprints that I find especially hard to do in this constantly connected era that we live in, where we're constantly being hit with dopamine from around us. And therefore, these are the rewards and incentives that I reserve for such work.
What advice would you give to a smart, driven college student about to enter the so-called real world? What advice do you think they should ignore?
So I started with the fact that they should not hold out for the perfect job or title. Don't optimize for the slightly higher salary. Instead, focus on, I think, the two things that actually matter early on in a career. Number one, every step in your early career must get you incrementally closer to whatever genuinely interests you. And the most promising path to success is pursuing genuine interests and setting yourself up for the circumstantial relationships, collaborations, experiences, or mistakes of the eye that will make all the difference in your life. I like to say that a labor of love always pays off, just not how and when you expect. So you want to set yourself up to succeed by taking new jobs and roles that get you incrementally closer to the things that are genuinely interesting to you. And I think we oftentimes fall into that spotlight of seduction where we're offered a great opportunity that sounds great, but isn't getting us closer to what interests us over the long term. And that is, I think, where we get off the rails of a great career. The number two is the fact that the greatest lessons you learn in the beginning of a career are about people. How to work with people, be managed by people, manage expectations with people, and lead other people. And so as such, the team you choose to join and your boss are obviously huge factors in the value of a professional experience early in your career. And again, I see so many people optimizing for a higher salary or a cooler sounding job and not actually doing the diligence on who they're actually going to be working for or with.
What are bad recommendations you hear in your profession or area of expertise?
The first thing that came to my mind was that industries are led by experts. We idolize the experts in our industry. We often forget that industries are often transformed by neophytes, right? I mean, look at you know, bold transformations like Uber disrupting transportation or Airbnb disrupting hospitality. These are all plays that were led by outsiders. I remember talking to Joe Gebbia, co-founder of Airbnb, who was saying that he didn't even know common hotel industry terms when he had started Airbnb. He had no background in the business, and as such, a concept that so many hotel executives discounted as ridiculous, that the customer would never want, you know, they were more open to. And which begs the question, you know, perhaps the playbook to change an industry is to be naive enough at the start to question these basic assumptions and to stay alive long enough to employ skills that are unique and advantageous to the space that you seek to change. You know, perhaps this naive excitement and pragmatic expertise are as equally important traits, but just at different times. The second bad recommendation you hear in your profession is that customers know best. And the only, the only focus group I ever ran at Behance was in the very beginning in 2007, when we were debating a number of different approaches towards our mission, which was to organize the creative world. We presented the focus group that we had gathered together with a bottle of wine and one evening. We presented to this focus group of participants five or six different ideas and then asked them to complete a survey, because we were really trying to triangulate, you know, what we would be doing first in our business. Universally, participants said that the last thing that they wanted was, quote unquote, yet another social network to connect with creative peers. They figured that MySpace was sufficient for this purpose. But when they were asked by us about their greatest struggles, participants talked about the expense and efficiencies of maintaining an online portfolio and how difficult it was to get attribution for the creative work that they had made. And so we were faced with a classic example of don't ask customers what they want, figure out what they need. And we ultimately built a social network for creative professionals that is now the world's leading creative professional community with over 12 million members. And, you know, 6 years later, it was acquired by Adobe. And so there was an important message there, which is you do always have to be seeking empathy with your customer. You can't always necessarily expect them to know what you're supposed to do for them.
And Scott, when you feel overwhelmed or unfocused, what do you do?
It's an easy answer for me. I whisper to myself, Scott, do your fucking job. With all the drama around us and inside of us, it's just too easy to get distracted or overthink a situation. It is too easy to rationalize why you're too busy or why you should wait to do something that just needs to get done. And so I opt for this kind of no bullshit approach when I need to do something mundane or I need to do something especially difficult, like deliver bad news or fire an employee. I just tell myself to stop screwing around and to do my fucking job. And I find that self-directive very hard to argue with. Anyways, I hope these answers were helpful. Again, congratulations on Tribe of Mentors, and it was an honor to participate.
Hey guys, Tim Ferriss again. If you enjoyed this, just a little taste of this guest, then you will love Tribe of Mentors, the book. Subtitle, Short Life Advice from the Best in the World, which details the routines, habits, and tools of more than 130 people who are the best at what they do. And you can pick and choose. It is a choose-your-own-adventure buffet, but you have just about everyone imaginable. And you can find free chapters, the full list of mentors at tribeofmentors.com and wherever books are sold. So take a look, tribeofmentors.com.